Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming out to the book release for Our Only Weapon, Our Spirit. It's a collection of Bobby Sims' poetry and essays, as those of you who bought the book or seen the book or on that table know. I'm Patrick, one of the editors, and Sam, the other editor, is over there. I'm going to just talk to you a little bit about kind of how this project happened and Yellow Bike Press and what we're doing and where that's going, and then Sam's going to talk a little bit more about the book and some of the other issues around the book, and then we're going to have some readings from the book and I think some other folks reading a little bit of poetry. Is that a lie or is that true?
Yeah.
Elliot says maybe. In addition to editing the book, I also, with Angie, started Yellow Bike Press a few years ago, and this is our most recent thing. And Yellow Bike Press is a small independent publishing company. We do everything on a sliding scale. And actually, for this book, we just bought all of our own binding equipment. So we're going to be binding everything on our own now, meaning that we can put out a lot more stuff for a lot less money, and sell it for a lot less money, which makes everybody happier, because then there's more stuff out there. So this is, in addition to the book getting put out by us, this was the first book that I was binding. So I apologize if there are flaws in that from the binding, but it should hold together just fine. And you probably won't notice unless you compare book to book. So this book came about because Sam, one night, maybe somewhat drunkenly, suggested to me that we should put together a book of Bobby Sands poetry. And I said, okay. And that was about 2 years ago. And then we talked about it again like 6 months later. We were like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And then we didn't talk about it again. And then as he was leaving to go to Minnesota permanently, he said, hey, we should do this. And I said, great, okay. And then like 6 months later, I left New York. And then through that, we were like, hey, neither of us are in New York. We're in places where we can make things happen better. Let's do this. And we put this together in like 4 months, I guess, from that point. So the seeds got planted a while ago. We knew what we wanted. We kind of talked about that. But got everything kind of put together, the ball rolling pretty quickly. And it all came together really well, we think. So if you picked up a copy of the book, thank you. If you haven't, they're over there, $10 to $20 sliding scale. Sam and I can sign them for you if you want, but my signature is super messy, so you probably don't want it. And that's all I have to say. I will give it to Sam now.
Thanks everybody for coming. Still a little bit pompous with the microphone and everybody kind of way over there, but I'll bear through that feeling. I want to thank Isaac and all the musicians whose names I don't know all of them. So, you know, tonight is the 30th year since the death on hunger strike of Bobby Sands. And you know, it's enough time, I think, to really think critically about what it means, what that struggle means, what that sacrifice has meant, what it continues to mean. If anything, I think it's a fair question of, does that continue to mean something? I obviously think it does, but, and that's sort of what we're about with putting this book together, at least for me. Yes, I wanted to read just a little bit of the introduction to it. I was going to read the acknowledgments because a lot of people we should thank. And then because I don't feel like either Patrick or I have any special ownership of this work, these poems, these nonfiction pieces, more than anybody else in this room, we wanted to invite people to come up and read a few of the poems themselves. Have you all come up and read something. Since that would be nice. So, enough people in this room are thanking the acknowledgments, and if when you hear your name, please either raise your hand or stand up and continue to stand, or have your name or have a hand raised until you're done. So this is the acknowledgments. This book would not have been possible without the hard work, dedication, and support of a number of people. A great deal of thanks to everyone who read drafts of this work, all of the proofreaders, and those who helped with the annotations. Elliot Liu, Alexis Powell, Autumn Brown, Adrian Marie Brown, and Mark Conway. Thanks to Angela Spitzer, who helped with research, for last-minute help. For last-minute help with the cover design, thanks to Eric Phillips Horst, who's not here. Thank you to Kate McCabe for saving us from a dumb idea and for giving us a better one. We are very grateful to the Bobby Sands Trust and to Mercer Press for all of their help and support. The Bobby Sands Trust is a group of Bobby Sands comrades who have taken on the sort of copyright and more broad administration of the work of Bobby Sands. And specifically, Sharon Donovan has been really helpful to us in that sense. So August Mawuntur Taigun Mikyun, Goromir Maagat, he's not here, unfortunately, but hopefully. Actually, thank God he still lives in Brooklyn because he's also an acupuncturist, and I threw my back out really bad a few days ago, so I can see him tomorrow. We are mindful as this book goes to press that there are still many prisoners incarcerated for participating in the Irish struggle for freedom. We also remember all those across the world struggling against imperialism, capitalism, and dehumanization. You are not forgotten. It's the acknowledgments page. I was just going to read a little bit of the introduction by way of introduction, or giving the work itself a bit of a context. So I'm going to read the first paragraph. And then read a paragraph in the middle, and then I'm going to go to the variant, and that'll take no more than 5 minutes. After 66 days on hunger strike, Bobby Sands, MP, died on May 5th, 1981. He was 27. In prison with little evidence and a special court with no jury, his last years were spent largely in solitary confinement for his refusal to wear the prison uniform, perform compulsory prison labor, or in any way be identified as an ordinary criminal. This refusal was in protest of the British policy of criminalization, wherein Irish political prisoners were rebranded as common criminals in spite of the extraordinary measures used to convict them and the obvious political nature of their activity. Irish nationalists widely viewed this as an effort to criminalize not just those volunteers currently in prison or who would serve time in the future, but to criminalize the entire history of Irish resistance to British domination. In protest, the prisoners in the H blocks of Longcash began a series of escalating protests, culminating in the hunger strike in which Bobby Sands and 9 other men died. I should read the next paragraph and that'll be it. At stake in the hunger strike were the same basic principles that had been a foundation of Irish resistance to British imperial rule for the previous 800 years. The right for the Irish people to define for themselves the conditions and terms of their daily lives, the right to reasonable and equitable systems of justice, a repudiation of the belief that Britain has any right to govern any part of Ireland, and for these strikers to back down on any one of those points of their protest would have meant to betray and become complicit in the persecution of the Irish rebels who had come before them. I think a lot of really great points that come after that, and if you'd like to find out what they are, please buy a copy of the book. I should say, actually, that a lot of my better ideas are completely stolen from a number of better writers than me, including Dennis O'Hearn has an amazing book called Looking at an Unfinished Song, which you should all read. So, I was going to read one poem. No one had Elliot Liu come up and read a poem that he told me once that he liked. And then if anybody wants to read a poem, or any other part of this, I think that would be really fantastic. Before I do that, there's a couple of announcements that I wanted to make. On May 19th, at the Manhattan Club, from 6 to 9, Tim Pat Coogan, Jerry Kelly, and Rita O'Hare, the former chair of Sinn Féin, will be speaking about the hunger strikes, the 1981 hunger strikes. And what they mean. And that's a free event open to the public. For more of that, you can speak to, he's right there, and he has your information for you. Again, free, and it should be good. And we're gonna have one more announcement at the end, I think, from Maisie. So I wanted to read a short poem. It's called A Burning Thread. The seagulls are crying, swirling up the spray upon the ocean of my mind, blown by the breeze of yesterday. Oh, the simple, gentle thoughts the loneliness of the prisoner, to see the golden mermaid of the rock, yet to be cut adrift from her. The mind knows no doors, a burning candle in the night to seek the green or gray of yesterday, or the if, the wish, the might. In the tomb of the darkest depths, the candle flickers dying. Death is slaying life unseen while the seagulls are crying. Ellie?
You can turn to page 84 in your book. When I was reading through doing, helping with editing, there were all these rhyming poems, and I liked this one because it was shorter.
Yeah.
A Twilight Valley. The last flitting sparrow passes by the dusty perspex plane. Paint. The little squabbling citizens have all gone home. The sky is silver and violet, and the darker things are already beginning to creep above the ugly gray barbed wire. The day is on the run. As if chased by the barking guard dogs who sent the first bold rats standing on the pipes, the prisoner clutches the steel wire grill, fingers already beginning to flush. He gapes out at the world. Hugging his shabby gray blanket, he fights for balance. His sickly yellow face is almost hidden behind his great, rambling beard. Matted, dirty, tangled clumps of hair hang like vines. His eyes are hard, fierce, and ablaze with the piercing look of the insensitive and the insane, or perhaps it is a mixture of the rigorous torture and the sheer delight of a peep at a dying day. He peers from his tomb like a reincarnated caveman, but there is no breathtaking panorama, just the dying day and the twilight ballet of the eloquent little wigtails, and the sky is now bleeding. The day has been wounded, mortally so, revealing a cloudy crimson hurt, and darkness has captured the heaven. The ballet is so beautiful. In three pairs, the dancing birds move with the grace of a veil in the breeze. The prisoner grips the biting steel grill, enthralled by the spectacle. They run and leap into a high flutter, pirouetting on the wing, descending on the breeze, tails bobbing, rising and falling to their prey. It is not a song, but a classical accompaniment. The day had but one breath of deep purple left, but even the night is repulsed by all. A single ballerina flutters in the magnificence of a twilight star. The moon has come to watch, the dogs howl, and the first rat scurries through the drainage here. Night is now plunging down, the dancers disappear with the day, and the prisoner, the poor eye groping, the prisoner can clutch the cold steel no longer. He falls into the bowels of his dank, dark tomb, a pathetic bundle of rags. The Twilight Valley is over, but all the audience will not go home. Perhaps he will never go home.
Modern times. It is said we live in modern times, in the civilized year of 79. But when I look around, all I see is modern torture, pain, and hypocrisy. In modern times, little children die. They starve to death, but who dares ask why? And little girls without attire run screaming, napalmed, through the night afire. And while fat dictators sit upon their thrones, young children bury their parents' bones. And secret police in the dead of night electrocute the naked woman out of sight. In the gutter lies the black man dead. And where the oil flows blackest, the streets run red. And there was he who was born and came to be, but lived and died without liberty. As the bureaucrats, speculators, and presidents alike pin on their dirty, stinking, happy smiles tonight, the lonely prisoner will cry out from within his tomb, and tomorrow's wretch will leave its mother's womb.
My body is broken, my heart is sore, more sore than the pain that wrecks my body. The sound of screaming men tears at my heart and taps my mind, and I wish to God it were I again, for the pitiful cries of my comrades being tortured are harder to bear than the physical hurt that besets my brutalized body. The ground is cold and black, yet warm and wet, where the hot blood lies in thick red splashes. But yet I feel calm and unafraid. I know I am shocked, and that when the tranquilizing shock flees, I will be the terrified, shaking, naked soul of wretchedness once again, and the tension will fall like a black, sinister shadow upon me. But I think I just don't care anymore. I have fought, we all have fought in our nakedness, and we have fallen like the lamb before the wolf. And so we lie in our own spilt blood, and I listen while the wolves savage the naked bodies of young men and not so young men, who all resemble old men and older men, and perhaps, I think, dead men. And the wolves leave lifeless men upon the blackened, slimy, filthy, stinking floor of ready-made tombs to drift in their unconsciousness, and those who are lost among the clouded tranquility of senselessness, thank God. And I have one thought. Bloody, unmerciful revenge, as I hear the screams of those who have never known life, only oppression and more oppression and the inhumanity of a monster who denies us our freedom. We have fought for freedom and we still fight for freedom with all we have left, our only weapon, our spirit. But in our nakedness, the spirit cannot repel the wolf or shield the blow of the baton or deflect the pulverizing, raining punches. It cannot repel torture. But this spirit of ours is the spirit that says to me, don't give up, don't give in, arise and face what they have. And another pitiful, terror-filled scream pierces the air amidst the melee of thuds and crashes and the sound of flying heavy spit and polished boots. And I think of those long lines of naked, ragged Jews in the midst of the jungle, of gray, gruesome barbed wire, and I hear their feet, their almost silent, shuffling, naked feet of wretchedness and inhumanity and the whispering, whimpering, weeping, shrieking, screaming sounds of torture and death, and I hear them all right. They're screeching at me from all sides, and the wolves of Dachau are no different from the wolves of this hell. And, dearest Jesus, is this not hell? And I know I will die as if I have to. We all will if I need to be to quench the flames of this hell. And my body aches and my mind is not my own, for the pain is tearing at my tortured body, and the hovering tension and fear have fallen upon me and have clutched my very soul, and the screams, the heart-destroying screams continue. My spirit cries out, arise, but my body pleads for no more, for mercy, and it wants to lie upon the cold, black, blooded, spattered ground and die to sleep, for it is weary and unbroken and perhaps dying each minute, each eternal minute. And my spirit says, get up, and I get up, as the pain causes more pain, and it is the pain of terror and fear, the fear of fear. And the wolves laugh, and I wonder, do people really know and understand? For there is no relief or ease. And I keep seeing those lines of Jews, and no one is listening to them, except for I understand. And I am shaking as the door of my tomb flies open, and a mass of black, uniformed, howling wolves attack me. And I know this is the price of resistance, the price of freedom. And the Jews scream in my mind and are drowned by the screams and suffering of the naked political prisoners that surround me, and their screams are dying to whispers. And I just don't care anymore, as I think they can do no more to us except murder us. Over 100 men in H Block have fallen, and their nakedness lie brutalized and savaged and beaten to pulp, but I feel calm and unafraid as my blood bleeds and my heart breaks. But my spirit cries out, arise, and dear God, is there no end? And I arise, for the risen people can never be put down, and so life in this living hell goes on.
We have one more announcement, and then a little bit more music, and then we're going to go to the bar if you want. So thank you all again so much for coming. It's really, I'm really deeply honored to be able to engage with this work in such a way. And I'm really profoundly honored that you all are here as part of that as well. So really thank you all. Anyway, one more announcement, and then music and drink, so.
Coming up here because everyone else did. In a way, I'm sorry to be doing this, but it was, what I'm going to announce is not something that I've been involved with so far at all. This will be the start of my involvement with this endeavor. So I'm speaking to you from more humility than we'll come across. And, because I was got a frantic voicemail about making an announcement about this at this particular event. And it's a tough and sobering time to be thinking about U.S. held political prisoners on the day, the exact day that Bobby Sands died on hunger strike, the first to go. And it's mind-boggling to me because all these, the H-Block hunger strikers were facing starvation just to achieve recognition of special category of political status from the government, which they had before that. The IRA prisoners of war had special category status from the British government. The U.S. held political prisoners have never had any political status recognized by the government at any time. They also, very few of them are in any position to that their parent organization can offer a ceasefire in exchange for release of prisoners, even though that doesn't fully work as we know. But so one of these guys, Jaleel Muntakim, who's a new African prisoner of war held in New York, is making a call for direct action, civil disobedience, maybe an occupation of a building around the release of the New York prisoners of war and political prisoners. And this would happen in August, Black August, probably in Harlem. So I feel a little funny about it, but I was asked to make this announcement. So, and I have a sign-up sheet. If you sign this sheet, that doesn't mean you're committing yourself, you know, to doing an action. It means that you're interested in hearing more about it, that you're likely to play a supportive role in the war effort. So I'm gonna pass that along. And something that I do know more about is South Brooklyn Anarchist Black Cross. We have a brunch where we write political prisoners, and it happens at the Brooklyn Free School. So there are flyers about that, and I do know about that. Okay, thank you.
I was just reminded, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that on Saturday at 7 o'clock, we'll be having another reading like this at Blue Stockings Bookstore in Manhattan. It'd be wonderful if you all came. That's it. Thanks everybody. And here's music again.
And Sam can give you directions to the bar.